This episode is brought to you by Camp Sleep Scared. Enjoy listening to pure fear and horror stories this Halloween season, and fall asleep while I read to you beside a campfire. Just search Camp Sleep Scared on your favorite podcast app, or click the link below.
Welcome to the campfire, the only place where friends and strangers alike sit down and tell tales in truth or fiction, in exchange of my blessing of their safe travels. Allow me to relight the fire while you relax and listen. Make your mind wander about the reality we live in. The story I'm about to tell you is from a traveler named Vifel's Disciple. He called this experience, "I just graduated from medical school, and my new hospital has rules that seem designed to kill people instead of saving them." Part 5. Please, allow me to tell you his tale. Everyone has that bitch in her life. That bitch can make you feel so small. She never gives an inch of sympathy or runs out of snarky comments. We despise her with almost all of our souls, save for the tiny part in the corner that secretly hopes for the validation that might come with winning her nod of approval just once. Dr. Vivian Skrit was that bitch. For just a moment after JD burst into the morgue, I thought that she would freeze in place. Then I was racing to keep up with her, praying that she would have a plan to save our asses. We watched Bretson die. I yelled, "What do you mean? His corpse has climbed out of bed." He meant to convey the universally accepted definition of each word as it fits into an English language sentence. "Dr. Ophelis," Dr. Skrit snapped as we ran after JD despite what you learned in kindergarten. There are stupid questions, and they're distributed unequally across a population of individuals who remind us that free speech is an unfortunate reality. That bitch. We came to a screeching halt in front of room 330. JD skittered back, eyes wide, afraid to open the door. I don't know what was happening in the room beyond, but it sounded like a subterranean giant had forced a colossal fart through 8 feet of mud, and smelled twice as bad. Dr. Skrit turned around and stared at the two of us with deadly calm. "I don't know if you're prepared for what's on the other side, but the reality is that I don't give a shit because life doesn't give a shit either. So you're simply going to deal with it. Welcome to the world of medicine." She leaned against the door and opened it wide. Dr. Brutson had looked bad when he was lying dead, but he was so much worse now. He was standing, facing away from us, swinging angry fists at anyone who approached. I could not see the back of his head because his neck had twisted to drop his skull into the 6 o'clock position. Brutson's body was severely damaged. He swung back and forth, unable to establish stable footing due to his shattered spine. Bony protrusions stuck through his skin, and the destroyed remains of what had once been his vertebrae no longer created a vertical line. Adding to the horror was the clear onset of livor mortis. Most of his arm was the sickly, pale, yellowy-gray of inedible peaches, but the backs of his thighs were an angry shade of the strawberry jam. Tiny lacerations endured in the fall were squeezing concentrated blood through his skin like a jelly donut. Then he turned around. His head was dangling by shredded skin, swinging upside down from what had once been a neck. His jaw flapped aimlessly, revealing a destroyed mouth that had recently vacated its teeth in an unholy enamel spray onto my ankles. Cassie Indelman, another first-year doctor in our class, lay in a corner. Her neck was clearly broken. It looked as though she'd been hurled against the wall at great speed. The analytical part of my brain understood that she had died before she hit the floor. Lydia, the nurse, stood on the other side of the room. She was holding a shaking hand in front of her, slashing a scalpel at Brutson's spinning arms as he approached. "Doctor, Dorian, on my left." Dr. Skrit yelled over Brutson's growling. We turned around to see an empty space where JD had once stood, the sound of echoing footsteps reverberating down the hallway. "I see Dr. Dorian wants to learn one of our rules the hard way," she heaved before turning to glare at me sideways. "Dr. Ophelis, this has to happen now, so listen very carefully. When life gives you lemons, fuck it." She bent low and lunged at Dr. Brutson's flailing corpse, slamming him against the wall. "Nurse, grab his arms and pin him down. Ophelis, open the cabinet in the corner." Lydia jumped into action, clasping his wrists and pushing him back. For a moment, Bretson was still. Then a guttural roar shook the walls, and his shaking told me that he would soon overpower his two captors. Decompartmentalize. I turned away from them and reached for the cabinet. I had both hands on the handles when I saw it on the door. 1913. It hadn't been there before. No cabinet was numbered. That's not how cabinets work. This number had appeared, suddenly, just for me. And this time I definitely remembered the rules. I hesitated. Brutson screamed. Doctor, Apheles, this is not the time for slap dickery. Hurry, Dr. Skrit commanded. I didn't move. When Dr. Skrit spoke again, it was in a suddenly softer, yet still deathly urgent, tone. Only you can see what's in front of you right now, Dr. Apheles. But there comes a time when you have to make the decision that you'll mostly be able to live with. And you don't have time to think. I breathed deeply. I can handle this, I told myself as I opened the door. I was wrong. Timothy's body lay crushed on the floor, flattened into a disgustingly small shape for a six-year-old. Yet he was still undoubtedly my little brother, staring up at me in slight judgment and great sadness. The right side of his body had been burned into charcoal, but the left side was perfectly preserved. The worst part, though, was the hazy middle where healthy skin and barbecued flesh united to create a horrifying mockery of my brother's face. His right eye socket was empty. His right cheek was gone. The teeth on that side were still present because without any skin to close his face. I could see deep into his tiny head. He licked his lips with a blackened tongue. Why did you leave me, Ellie? I froze. Doctor, Apheles, we need you, now. You've only come back because you need something from me. Is that right, Ellie? My brother's corpse asked. I sobbed. Lydia screamed, and the sickening sound of breaking bone echoed throughout the room. Why didn't you come in time to save me, Ellie? Why are you here now? I struggled to speak. Then I saw it, a cartoonishly large syringe, clearly made of carbon steel, with a bright yellow H2SO4 printed across it. The needle was hidden, and I knew that it would spring forth once triggered. Timothy was clutching it in his sinewy fingers. I need that from you, Timmy, I whispered. He clutched it tighter. But why didn't you need me? Lydia screamed again. Time is almost up, Doctor. I'm so sorry, Timmy, I sobbed. I didn't want to leave you. I know you don't understand, but please tell me that you know I love you. The tears rained down uncontrollably. How? He responded sadly. How can I know that you loved me if you left me to die? Doctor, Apheles, decide now. I'm going to take this, Timmy, but I love you so much. I'm your favorite big sister, remember. He stared back with chilling sobriety. If you take this from me now, Ellie, I'll always know that you only came back when you needed to help yourself, and that you chose to leave me behind. You'll never see me again. No, I whispered sadly as I plucked the syringe from his weak grasp. Then I turned away from the ghost of my little brother, and I ran to the place where I could make a difference. Lydia lay on the floor with both arms bent at unnatural angles. Brutson had Dr. Skrit pinned to the ground. His hands were wrapped around Dr. Skrit's wrists, and she was unable to resist as his stronger arms reached out to squeeze her eyeballs. The emotional part of my soul had worn so thin that no veneer was left. Only a time-worn, rocky edge of logic remained as I acted efficiently to complete the task in front of me. I took 1, 2, 3 giant steps to build momentum that I transferred into a forceful thrust of my arm. I didn't consider how accurate my aim might be, because it simply had to reach its target, and no second option remained. Brutson's eyeball squished and popped as I slammed the syringe into his face. I felt the reaction as the trigger shot the needle deep into his head, past his eye, and well into his frontal lobe. Then I crashed to the ground. Brutson leaned back and screamed. Dr. Skrit wasted no time in escaping from beneath his grasp, turning to crawl towards me in a furious scramble. I sat, transfixed, as I watched Brutson transform before me. Sulfuric acid affects the skin in much the same way that an open flame does. But I had never seen the effects of shooting H2SO4 directly into a cranium. And the show left me transfixed. Brutson grabbed the sides of his head as his face began to melt. He lacked the wherewithal to remove the syringe from his eye, so it dangled in front of him like a bizarre synthetic phallus. Then he coughed, spraying blood across the floor, and leaned forward. His eyeball fell like a dropped marble. It was followed by viscous gray sludge that I presumed to be his quickly dissolving brain. I didn't think I'd be able to pry myself away from the sight in front of me. We need to get Lydia out of here, Dr. Skrit commanded, and suddenly, I was able to do the impossible. I held her shoulders as Dr. Skrit pulled Lydia's ankles, and we quickly ran out the door. She slammed it behind her. I fell to my hands and knees in a daze. The next several minutes were blurry. Dr. Skrit did a lot of yelling, and we were suddenly surrounded by people willing to help. I wondered, vaguely, where they had been in those precious seconds when we needed them most. There are certain soul-defining moments, I think, that can only ever be experienced alone. Lydia was put onto a gurney and wheeled away. The same doctor and janitor that I had seen twice before walked quietly into the room, spent a short time inside, then darted quickly out. They each carried a large, wet garbage bag in one hand. Doctor, Apheles, you need to come with me. Dr. Skrit's voice was calm and forceful. I can't, my brother's in the closet.
Hey, boys and girls. I know I've been gone for a while. My name is Ellie, and I'm the creator of this podcast you're listening to. I'm excited to announce that I'm finally in the right space to create more content again. The link below will take you to my Patreon, where I will read you stories with no ads, no background music, and no robotic mistakes. Just you, me, and the stories we both love. For those of you who will support me while I build up episodes again, a lifetime lower rate is my gift back to you. Be one of 99 special people I'll always think about in my dreams. See you there.
I mumbled before a wave of emotion silenced me. No, Dr. Apheles, he isn't. I have to go back, I squeaked. Ellie, she whispered, you can move forward or stay in place, but you can never, ever go back. Now, will you follow me? I hesitated. Then I stood. Dazedly, I moved until I found myself sitting across her desk for the second time that night. Life always moves slower or faster than we'd like, but never at the right pace. She explained calmly, tonight, things have been going faster. She looked down at me over her thin spectacles. I returned only silence. She nodded to herself. We need to do this quickly, and I won't repeat myself. So listen carefully. She cleared her throat. The time has come, Dr. Apheles, to tell you about rule number 7. Now, that was the end of my tale. I hope you enjoyed yourself, listening while escaping the world you live in. That is all for today. Safe travels, and a blessed day.